but she spoke about how life is like a puzzle. And sometimes you have an ugly puzzle or a difficult piece to that puzzle. And she said the tendency when we have something ugly is to either force it to fit or destroy it, throw it away, that's it. When in reality, the best thing to do with a piece that doesn't fit your puzzle is to just set it aside. Mm-hmm. You'll get there. There will be a time and a place where that piece will fit or that piece can be resolved, whether resolving means you come to a solution or you choose to just put that out of your life. But that's what I'm thinking of as you say this, that if there's a grievance, I'm not saying pretend there's no grievance. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking, could you set that piece aside for the day, for mm-hmm. the evening, for the couple of hours, and let's focus on the other pieces that we share.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor, your co-host. And today it's co-host conversation day. And Michelle, can you believe it? It's been 5 years for both of us, and we are coming up on another holiday season. So let's talk today a little bit about the holidays. Not any particular holiday, but family dynamics, relationships, kindness and grief, loss, everything as we're in the middle of these beautiful holiday weeks. What do you got?
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking about what we wanted to talk about on the show, and we've covered a lot of things, right? We've covered gratitude, we've covered traditions, we've covered a lot of different things in relationship to the holiday. But I was thinking about kindness and how sometimes it's not easy to be kind to our family members, the people that we love
the
most. That
should be the closest to us, yeah.
That are the closest to us,
right?
Those are the ones that sometimes it's easiest to be horrible to. I know for me as a mom, I kind of get the brunt of my children's, whatever it might be, their anger, hostility, their own grief that they're processing, which we don't really talk about a lot on the show. We don't talk a lot about our children and their grief process. We do that to protect them.
Sure.
Not our story to tell, and we're very aware of that. But I wanted to talk about kindness and the things that we could do to maybe have a little more peace in the process of this holiday.
Okay, I love that. So tell me a little bit about this piece. We were just talking before we started recording about forgiveness and kindness and how it's kind of on us more than the other person when mm-hmm. we choose to forgive or let go. Talk about that a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, we were talking about that. I'm not going to go into the particular situation that we were discussing, but I have a person in my life close to me, and they realized that there was somebody in their life that they had not really forgiven. And, you know, forgiveness is an interesting process because usually we feel like you did me wrong, right? That's all fingers pointed at the other direction. There is nothing coming back at me. You did me wrong. I'm the victim here. You're the monster, right? But the truth about that situation is oftentimes we have a part to play in it. Hmm. So let's kind of like just consider some scenarios or situations. Sure. Oftentimes people maybe look at us from the outside and they think, oh, well, she has it all together. Or, oh, for instance, let's just talk about this scenario. You and I, we have very different losses. You had a big hero's loss, right? You've been propelled to the forefront. And a lot of people will ask me, like, how's she really doing? Or, like, right? And it's just very different. The process that I went through was a less public one. The only public part of it was the friends on my Facebook wall. I was well supported by my community of friends and people who showed up to support our loss. I was overwhelmed, actually, by how many people showed up. But it was nothing in comparison to the community that showed up for you, right? People sometimes perceive us as being a certain way or like, well, yeah, if I had had all the support and whatever, then XYZ, right?
Yep.
As if something that we didn't get that we saw somebody else get prevents us.
Yeah, handicaps us from moving forward or surviving or whatever. Or thriving. Sure.
Yeah. And I think that that happens on a microcosm within our own families, right? My kids sometimes think like, well, you have it easy. Well, I don't have your dad. And not all of them, but most of them have a partner to go home to.
Right.
But I don't want to get in a, well, you have this, right?
Right. Is it necessary to compare, loss, right. Like yours is better or worse than mine?
Yeah. Right. It doesn't matter.
It's such a human tendency, though.
It is.
Yeah.
And so how can we show kind of that niceness? So, you know, we have family members. Maybe we have a family member with an addiction. Maybe we do or don't want that person in our home. Now, there might be a reason to really set a boundary and not have that person in your home. Sure. And that may be being kind both to yourself and to the other guests that you're choosing to have in your home. I'm not saying that there's any right or wrong way. I don't know people's specifics.
It can be such a personal situation.
It's a very personal situation, right? But let's say somebody's in our home, and I feel like the holidays is a time where it's very triggering. Don't you?
I think so for sure. And I think that's true for a lot of people, regardless of what they're facing in their lives. Maybe it triggers the trauma of their childhood. It triggers financial worries. It triggers spiritual questions of what's my religious thoughts about this holiday. I mean, it can be, it's like the last couple of months of the year, everything's just on hyper mode, right?
Right.
We're even busier. We're having even more scheduled events, more people in our home. More to worry about, more to keep track of, more to pay for, more to buy, more to attend. And I think that does puts all of us under a stressful position, regardless of whether you just buried a spouse or a parent or whatever particular.
Right. Absolutely. And then, you know, you have people coming to your home, but like for instance, my adult children, they have other sides of their families to go to now, right?
Right.
So it's like, oh, well, if I host this, then I know that I'm putting stress on them. And I don't mean to put stress on them, but sure. If I don't host this, then the kids that don't have somewhere to go
have nowhere to go.
And I don't have anywhere to go if I don't put something on.
So what will you do this year, for example? Are you hosting? Or are
I'm
you going
hosting
somewhere?
Thanksgiving.
And just the kids are all invited and mm-hmm. whoever makes it, makes it. What's that look like?
Yeah, and I haven't put out the, that's a good reminder. I haven't put out the invitation yet, but I'm hosting Thanksgiving just like I always do. And I'm also hosting New Year's Eve.
Oh, very fun. Okay.
I've never had my kids with me on Christmas Day. They've all been busy or working or doing their own thing. So I've never been with anyone on
Christmas
Day. That's
not been the tradition.
Yeah. Even when I had a boyfriend, he had his kids and his family. So
He
did his own thing. So
then can I ask, what do you do on Christmas if you don't host or go somewhere?
I usually sleep in and go to a movie.
Do you enjoy that? Like, I think you've said that before. Now that you say that, is that,
I do.
Are you feeling sad about that? Or is that just this is my day?
We used to do that with our kids. So our big dinner was New Year's Eve dinner. And then my kids would usually stay the night if they were already living away from home. And the grandkids and everyone stayed under our
Christmas
roof.
Christmas Eve, and then we
do presents, and then everyone would leave. We don't do that now, and so my husband and I would go and watch a movie. And so I just continued that after everyone was gone. And I just want to caveat this for all the widows out there who may find that really difficult and so sad. And I've seen this online, right? Sure. You and I have both seen this online.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't have anyone to go to dinner with. I don't have anyone to go to a movie with. I am accustomed to traveling for work and being alone at dinner. So I've never had
a
problem.
So you've kind of already got that. Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
I've never had a problem being alone. I'm not saying that that's ideal for everybody, but it works for me.
It works for you. And I'll throw in, this is one of the things I remember, particularly right after Brent died. I felt like I didn't just lose Brent, but I lost every other adult in my life.
Yeah.
Because we are so couple-centered in our culture in terms of social engagements. Once you're married with children, even before you're married with children, I don't know. Our producer, Kellyanne, could speak to that. She's not married, and we still live in a couple-centered social world, right? Mm-hmm. And Brent, we had a busy life, young little kids. It's not like we were going on all these luxurious vacations or elaborate dates together, but we would go out.
Right.
Even if it was to a political dinner, I'd be his date. Or if we had a conference, or sometimes we'd just go grab ice cream or a movie or something. And so after he died, not only did I not have him to go to the movie or the ice cream or the whatever with, also any other couple that we might have done those things with as a double date or a small group. And I remember thinking, like, you guys could call me and invite me. You don't have to set me up on a blind date. Like, I could be the awkward third or seventh wheel or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I think that's because I had spent many years of my married life not physically in the same space as Brent because of his military service. And if I, or his political mm-hmm. obligations at home, if I had stayed home from every social event when he was alive that he wasn't able to attend, I would have never done anything outside of the PTA, let's be honest. But that first awkward year or so,
it is hard.
I remember just thinking, like, hey, grown up friends of mine and Brent, can I come on a date with you guys? Like, mm-hmm. I don't need a new boyfriend. I just, can I come? And so you mentioned a holiday.
Gosh,
alone
that first year was
on a
hard.
Date or theater. You feel like you've lost yeah. every adult besides the yeah. ones that are caring for you and coddling you, which is perfect. And I needed that. But I missed the social interaction with other adult humans, male and female.
Yes.
In a non-romantic way.
Right. Absolutely. I see so much value in men. I'm a big, you know, I know right now they're men feel like they're under attack, but I love men and I don't love all men romantically. I
right.
just love
what a value in
the value
both.
Of a man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They think differently than we do. They tend to compartmentalize a little bit better than we do, where everything that ever happens to us is all interconnected to every other thing that ever happened to us and will
so
ever
emotional.
Happen to us. And so there's a grounding that men offer that, you know, especially that first year that I could have really used in my life.
Right.
And I didn't feel like John didn't have a lot of really close friends. He had one really close friend and he was in his own grief. I mean, he was devastated by John's loss. And whenever we would talk, we would just start crying. So it wasn't, you know, I didn't feel like I could call him and say, let me burden you with
that wasn't the source
one more
of strength.
Thing in your life. And I knew he had his own struggles going on too as well. So, you know, these are complex things.
Right.
And I think that when we have people over in our house, sometimes, especially let's just say as a mom of adult children, we have some expectations. We would like them to help out a little bit more, especially if they're adult kids and they're coming over. Like, can you help clean up the table and do the dishes and be a part of the work?
The family dinner, right.
That goes into such a huge event. And so sometimes we can have our own feelings about that,
yep.
which is all tied to history of raising our children.
Yep.
Sometimes it's tied to other things like, do they respect me? Do they appreciate this? Do they? And they may or may not.
And we can interpret one action at a Thanksgiving or holiday dinner as this now means XYZ about
right.
our relationship when maybe it wasn't that deep. Megan, my daughter, right. my oldest, she's very famous for saying a lot of catchy things. But she'll say all the time, Mom, it was never that deep.
Yeah.
Mom, it was like don't overthink it. Don't read into someone's, you know, if somebody doesn't meet your expectation, how do we either communicate better those expectations or how do we not read too much into the
right.
failure to meet those expectations? Because all
right.
of that can hurt.
Right. And a lot of that's projection, right? We have these feelings. We've had past experiences. So, you know, I think the key of this conversation is really just like having some key things to think about going into the dinner. Maybe try to let go of some expectations. Maybe try to just appreciate whatever unfolds or ensues for what it is rather than tying it into a whole bunch of things, right? If something topical comes up and it's not warranted or wanted, or somebody is now taking their trauma opportunity to express their trauma and air it out and maybe clear something, what will the boundaries be? How do you hold the room in a way that you don't want it to get out of control, right? I mean, the thing about the holidays is it's also the biggest day for police to be called out.
Yep. Just everybody, just emotions are at
they're
a breaking
high.
Point almost all the time.
Right.
Okay, so do you have answers to that? Are you going to answer us?
Well,
or are you
yeah.
just going to leave us there hanging like, how do we? Michelle, I don't know. Tell me.
So if you happen to know somebody really does have a grievance and they're coming with a chip on their shoulder, you have a few options in advance of the day. so-and-so, I understand you have some big feelings about this thing. I would like this day to be about healing, connection, and family. It's not the place or time to try to resolve this. If you can't be willing to be able to just put this aside for this day, not saying that you have to be okay with it, you have to accept whatever.
But maybe for these few hours, we're going to have an agreement.
For these few hours, if we can have an agreement that this is not the time or place, I would love to have you attend.
So you suggest
just
being direct, not beating around the bush, not hoping somebody reads your mind or takes all the subtle hints you're dropping.
When does that ever work?
Never. That's why I'm saying that, like, oh, how many times do we do that? So maybe you could have a calm conversation with someone. You're not tying a lot of strings to it, but you're just...
And
you're letting people
them.
Know up front. Yes.
I acknowledge you are
hurting about
this thing.
Okay.
And I do not want to get involved in that conversation about why those things are what they are. They are what they are. And I feel like I hold that space for you to have that hurt and that pain.
And I want you to be with us. Because
I
can think where this could be, I can see it going a couple of ways. Maybe I'm the host and the grievance is with me.
Mm-hmm.
Or the grievance is something I'm directly involved with. That's one conversation. But maybe I'm the host, and let's say I'm person A as the host, and the grievance is between person B and C, and I'm not really in the middle of that grievance, and I'm almost just saying, please don't bring me into the middle of that grievance.
Right.
Particularly
right.
during this holiday gathering. I love what you said, healing, family, connection. That's going to be our focus. And so the counsel would be to just be direct and respectful, kind, but open, and communicate that before the event is even
The event. I want to include you. I want you to be a part of this. Let's say it's a brother and the grievance is with mom and dad. I don't want to get in between this relationship with you.
I don't want to pick sides.
I see your pain. I feel your pain surrounding this. You don't have to acknowledge whether it's right, good, or it doesn't really matter.
But it is there. We can acknowledge.
But you can acknowledge that it's there and just say, I would like this day to be about healing and connection, not necessarily resolution, but can we just have a good moment together as a family? Can we just hold this space to just put everything aside and just enjoy the day for what we can?
And I love that you're not saying that means you just have to carte blanche, erase the grievance, or pretend you're not upset. It reminds me there was a young adult who one time was making a comment in church that's really just gotten me thinking ever since. But she spoke about how life is like a puzzle. We're building all these pieces. And sometimes you have an ugly puzzle or a difficult piece to that puzzle. And she said, the tendency when we have something ugly is to either force it to fit or destroy it, throw it away. That's it. When in reality, the best thing to do with a piece that doesn't fit your puzzle is to just set it aside.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get there. There will be a time and a place where that piece will fit or that piece can be resolved. Whether resolving means you come to a solution or you choose to just put that out of your life. But that's what I'm thinking of as you say this, that if there's a grievance... I'm not saying pretend there's no grievance. I'm just asking, could you set that piece aside for the day, for the evening, for the couple of hours, and let's focus on the other pieces that we share. Memories, again, if it's family, what memories do we have that bring us together? What commonalities do we have maybe separate from that grievance? And then maybe that can help lead to a time where that grievance can be better addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We need to take a break. We can continue this conversation when we get back. And we're back. Yeah, I think it's really important that we not try to resolve the grievance in advance, that we not interject ourselves, especially if we're the host. Because then we're just pitting sides, right? We're choosing a side. And I think your language really matters. So I'm not suggesting you use my language in particular, but really be thoughtful and maybe even write down and take some time before you call this person to make sure that you've been able to address it in a very neutral way so that they don't feel like they're being ostracized. And you could even say, I'm having this conversation with mom and dad as well.
Again, you're not secretive. Right. You're not taking sides. You're just setting the tone for kindness. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what if we get halfway through the gathering, partway through the gathering, and maybe I've had that conversation, or maybe I didn't know there was a grievance, that conversation needed to be had. Do you have some counsel for us on what if you're in the middle of the family gathering and some of the tension arises? Are there ways to diffuse that without blowing up and somebody either gets kicked out or leaves in tears, or as the host, I go hide in tears?
Yeah.
How do you navigate some of those difficulties in the moment?
I think that that's a hard one because there's a lot of complications with that. As the host, are you willing to confront hard things? Is confrontation something you're comfortable with? How are you going to do when you're under stress as being the host and you have many people and you see something going down and you're like, oh, this is going to be disaster. Number one, if you're saying, oh, this is going to be a disaster, surely it will be because that is the energy now that's out there. Right. And so, you know, I think that gets a little bit trickier depending on personalities, depending on family relationships and communication styles. But I think that there are some things that we could do. For instance, if you see a situation or somebody struggling and you see them really ready to burst or needing to say something, maybe just take them aside and to go to another room and say, hey, I see you're struggling. I'm not going to be offended if you feel that you need to leave. This needs to be a good day for everybody else that's here. And I don't want to, this isn't the time. This isn't going to resolve in the way that I think that you would really rather this resolve in. If you become angry, if you become aggressive, if you say something that you're later going to regret.
Right.
So do you need some time? You can stay here in this room.
Yeah. Maybe separate.
Do you want me to get your family? Do you want to, you know, do you want to leave quietly? How can I support you? And you also support me. And making this day about connection, family, and forgiveness and gratitude for what we do have. How can we focus on that?
I love that it's just so direct. And I think, Michelle, that's probably where most of us struggle. We don't just say, hey, I see you're struggling. Let's talk for a minute. We're like, oh, they're struggling. I should try to fix that. I'm responsible for that. I'm going to try to drop a few hints so everybody picks up on what they think. And then pretty soon you're in that mind mm-hmm. game space when... In both scenarios you've just described, the answer is respectful, mm-hmm. calm, direct talking, just communicating and not dropping a hint, not whispering around their back. And I think what a world.
And also not needing to solve it, right? Like
or,
it's not your job to
take
solve
sides,
it.
Or judge it.
Or judge it.
Like you said,
or
you're not saying
side.
Right or wrong, you're just like, acknowledging it.
You've got to be kind of Switzerland in this scenario, right? You've got to be the one to be remain
so
neutral.
Good. And stay Swiss flag on my pole that day.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's got to be neutral.
That's
and
so good.
You really
and
have
today,
to approach
we can,
it.
We can
with
choose
love.
Whatever that day is. That day can be a neutral day. We can have a peace mm-hmm. treaty.
Yeah.
And focus on that. I love that.
And I think it is important to put out the intention for the event. This is my intention for this event. This is why I would like you to gather in my home. And these are the things that I would like this day to be about. Be more creative and conscious in that creation of what you're
and love that you're creating. I mean, how much time do we put into creating the dish,
right?
Creating the clean space, creating the centerpiece, creating the whatever. Let's create the feeling of the room. I'm taking a class right now, and we start every single class talking about what's called the norms of collaboration. And I was not familiar with those. It's new to me. And the idea behind the norms of collaboration is there's certain norms. Mm-hmm. We're going to agree to it's basically like the rules of the game that when we collaborate or when we interact or when we plan or work together, we're going to keep these rules in mind. And, you know, it's kind of the concept of creating a safe space mm-hmm. or our professor calls it a brave space, a space where people are willing to be direct and willing to be open without being hostile or taking mm-hmm. sides. But the one that always sticks out to me in these norms of collaboration is presume positive intent.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody says something so dumb and so offensive and you can't believe they would say something to a widow or to mm-hmm. a whatever, in your mind, you give them the space that maybe they didn't mean it in a mean way. Maybe they didn't mean to offend. Maybe to them, that was a perfectly normal, nice thing to say. Now, maybe they were being a total jerk, but in your head space, for your own peace of mind, you're going to give them that presumption of positive intent because it leaves the door open for some conversation rather than slamming that door and then everybody's upset and, you know, the dynamite continues to blow.
I love that. I love that you're learning about that too. It's kind of sad because I think that presumption of innocence, which in America we have in our justice system, but we are not
using it
either in our justice system in our political conversations anymore.
Or just half the regular conversations about daily life. We presume like everybody's out to get us. Everybody's, you know, we either take offense or feel like we've been slighted or, you know, mistreated every time. They must be out to get me. Well, really, maybe they just said it wrong. Maybe they were just tactless for a minute.
You know, there's a misperception about you, and I want to clear it up on the show.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Well, I think you and I have talked about this before. Sometimes people will ask me, like, oh, what is it like to work with Jenny? You know, she's so LDS. She's so churchy. She's whatever. The interesting thing about you that I really have come to appreciate is that your life has not been an easy road, from losing your dad to struggles in your family with addiction. Yeah. Like even before Brent's loss, Jenny Taylor's life was not a rose covered garden. It wasn't a path full of rose petals laid out for you. And I think that that gives you a very non-judgmental space to come from, because you realize that even people that are faithful members of the church are also sinners who are doing their best,
struggling
to put their best foot forward every day.
No, I appreciate you mentioning that. It's funny because if you would have talked to me 10 or 20 years ago, I probably would have been more straight line than I am, which is saying something because I am a straight line.
But we're on a journey.
Yeah, we're on a journey. But, you know, I think the older I get and the more of life I live and the more of I see struggles within myself or within those around me, I think I do hold more space for people to be on their own journey. But at the same time, I will tell you, I'm happy with the journey I'm on, right? I don't feel attacked. Right. I don't feel like I'm wrong and have to completely abandon that false faith of my childhood or whatever. And interestingly enough, I was talking about this not long ago in kind of a public speaking event where I was, and I was telling the story of how I grew up and kind of my teenage years. And my dad died by suicide when I was 10. My mom was a single mom trying to make ends meet and raise us. Two brothers got involved in all kinds of drugs and alcohol. And I was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where we don't drink. We go to church on Sunday. We pay 10% of our income in tithings and some of these practices of my childhood. But I was in college when I left home. I'd gone away to college, but I really left home. I left Utah, I left America, and I spent one summer in Brussels, Belgium. And that was a real growing opportunity for me because I did see so much more diversity. Let's be honest, North Ogden, Utah is not the most diverse place on the planet, religiously or otherwise, right? But living in Brussels, it's where the United Nations headquarters is. It is a itty-bitty country in the middle of a whole bunch of ethnicities and backgrounds and races and religions. And as I saw that, I came to appreciate the beauty of my friends who were there from Vietnam because they spoke French and they speak French in Belgium so they could take safe haven there, or friends from Morocco because Morocco's not that far, and just friends from all over the world. In the summer I was there, I began to see the beauty of their beliefs and backgrounds and ways of life. But I also gained kind of my own footing for, but this is what I believe.
Right.
And it wasn't because my mom was there, and it wasn't because my bishop was there, and it wasn't because anybody was watching and would know if I went to church on Sunday. I discovered I like going to church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I like communing with God. I like having my own journey with Him. But I appreciate that. That's a huge compliment to me that you can see I try to hold space for people to be on their own journey. And again, the older I get, the more I realize everyone's journey goes back and forth and inside out, upside down daily.
Right. And I think a lot of people, especially here locally, that will, you know, ask me these questions. I think it's just easy because we're predominantly LDS in Utah. We're predominantly white. We're predominantly,
conservative,
you know, a lot of things.
All kinds of things.
You're, you know, You served a mission, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I went to BYU for crying out loud, Michelle. I'm right. All the things.
You are all the things. And you've lived a straight and narrow path. I mean, I've never heard you say, I got a little wild or I got off track for a little bit. No, I've never heard that at all. But I feel like you've always, we've had a lot of variety on our show. We've had a lot of people from all walks of faith, no walk of faith. You put up with me on a regular basis.
We have lots of conversations off air that get into far more details than on air, right?
Right. You know, I'm not walking that super narrow path, and you get to hear a lot of my experiences, and you're like, oh wow, that's just so. I don't feel judged. Otherwise, I would never share it with you. Right. But you have a lot more insight on my life than probably most people. Which is honestly, you know, in some ways the most dangerous, right? I mean, you're connected to all of my relationships, like, you know, the connection to grief and the people that I brought on here, but also my political connections. Yeah. And, you know, I've been very honest with you, but I've never really felt judged, and I appreciate that.
And I will say the same from you. I don't, like I said, I feel like we're, and I hope that's a space, if you're one of our listeners regularly, if you're one of our guests previously and you're listening today, I hope they have also felt safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope they have felt that they can have their own faith or no faith journey. And I hope that it fits in what we talk about.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's one of the things I've learned. Maybe when we come back from the break, I can talk about this class I teach at Utah State that talks about this. It'll be so good. Do we have a few minutes?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Here we go. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back and we're talking about faith and kindness and space and non-judgmental and just all these dynamics in a relationship. So in the middle of the pandemic, I was invited to an LDS ward, to a congregation of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, to give a Zoom presentation on hope and resilience, right? I was happy to do it. It was not very long after Brent had died. I felt like I'd learned quite a bit through my own journey, and I was happy to share some of those things where in a very faith-based setting that I felt God had helped me and my faith had carried me. And so the people who invited me to give the speech wanted me to come to their home to deliver the speech. And they set up the little camera and we all had our masks and then we set up separately. And I broadcast from this little coffee table by the piano. Anyway, beautiful couple, last name Glauser, somewhere in Salt Lake. I don't remember where we were. So I was in their home and we're delivering this message and kind of that was it. About a year later, as the COVID and everything settled down a little more and interaction was more possible, the gentleman from that couple, Mike is his name, called and let me know he was making a series of videos on resilience and happiness and perseverance and wondered if he could interview me as one of a myriad of people. So he came to my home with a little camera. They interviewed and asked some questions. We shared a few things and then he was on his merry way. Well, what he was working on is this beautiful class that's currently offered at Utah State University in the business school. And it's all about success and happiness and the interplay between those two. And most people will think, hey, as soon as I'm successful, I'll be happy, right? If I can find some success, big enough house, big enough bank book, big enough title, big enough whatever, once I'm successful, I'll magically be happy. But the truth is the opposite. Mm-hmm. If I am happy, I am much more likely to be successful. So Mike he's an entrepreneur. He's created and sold companies. He's taught young students to create and build their own businesses. He works with Utah State students around the world in developing countries to build their economy. But this class that he's designed, he's based it on a book called One People, One Planet. I highly recommend it. I think it's like $15 on Amazon. It's a thin little book. It's an easy read. I love it on Audible because Mike himself narrates it. And so you hear the author's voice. One People, One Planet. But what he's done and where it's relevant to what we were saying before the break is he's got his own faith and his own principles that he thinks leads to XYZ happiness or resilience, fill in the blank. But he wasn't satisfied with it being just isolated to his faith. He wanted to look at the bigger human picture. So he has spent years traveling the world, international business, working with people from all over on really in-depth levels. And he's come up with these studies where he has studied the original religious texts of Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, and Islam. Like back to the mm-hmm. original days of the They're original cool. founders, not all the breakoffs. Mm-hmm. Then he studied teachings of Socrates, Aristotle, John Locke, all kinds of philosophers, Asian philosophers whose names I can't even remember because we don't teach about them a lot here in American schools, but world philosophers throughout history. So world religions, world philosophers. Then he gets into the field of psychology. And it's almost like the biggest Venn diagram you've ever seen, where he finds what are the recurring themes, what teachings did the Hindu sages say mm-hmm. that Muhammad also said, that Jesus also, what that everyone said, that John Locke also said, in terms of happiness in your relationships and dealings with other people. Doctrine aside of their different beliefs, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But he's come up with six principles that every one of those things, scientific, psychological research, Christian or Hindu teachings.
Are you going to tell us what they are?
Oh my gosh, remember? If I can remember off the top of my head. Yes, hold on, give me a minute. I'm the teacher, I should know this. Okay, so One People, One Planet is the title of the book, and he's got six universal truths that come through all of these different sources and just reinforce each other's teachings. And they are, the first is overcome our fabricated ego, refrain from judging other people, engage in healing good deeds, forgive others for their offenses, share the good fortunes in our lives, and help the needy in our communities. And let me talk about these for a minute. They're like a staircase.
Yeah.
So the first one, he calls it the fabricated ego. Now, we think of ego as you're so egotistical, you're so full of yourself, you're so conceited. But your ego is problematic if it's inflated or deflated. I'm right. no good. I'll never be able to do it. I've always been dumb. I'm the ugly one. I'm not good enough. That negative talk on either side, or that I'm the best, either one of those. We talk about finding your authentic self, removing the labels everyone's thrown on top
coaching.
Of you.
This yes. is what I do every day.
Well, this is what I get to
These
teach.
Are the steps that I get to move people through and, in order. This is
and
the
they
inner
work. That's yeah. what. So again, there's those six teachings. And I've read the book and I've listened to the audiobook and I help teach this course and we engage with college students and there's an exercise we do on each to really practice it, not just talk about it. And as I've done this, I just find myself nodding. Like, you know what? That works. Sure, Jesus or Muhammad might have said it. Sure, John Locke might have said it with Socrates. Sure, a psychology study proved it. But guess what? I know it because it works.
And I would say that they're universal truths.
They're universal truths. So mm-hmm. I would encourage anyone listening, One People, One Planet by Mike Glauser. If you or someone you know is a student at Utah State, encourage them to take the class. It's offered either online or in person. So last year I taught one section in person, one section online. Right now it's just all online. In fact, we started last week. It's a block class, so it's a half of a semester.
I would love to talk to him because I would love to challenge the idea of happiness.
Yes. Have him on.
I have thought about this a lot, and it's funny because I was going to make a TikTok about it because I need to start making TikToks for my coaching
goodness.
Stuff.
Okay.
But I was thinking about this, and I saw a TikTok from Matthew McConaughey.
Oh.
And he said, you know, what true happiness is or that the goal should be happiness. And I actually don't agree with that.
What do you put the goal as?
I think we should have peace and contentment within
Love
ourselves.
Love it.
I think the baseline is peace and acceptance of self. Happiness is an emotion that comes and goes.
Sure. And so is sadness. Yeah. And so are all kinds
so
of emotions.
All of these things, right? They come and go. So what's the baseline? And the baseline should be some sense of peace and contentment.
And contentment. And peace with yourself, peace with those around you.
Well, it starts with ourselves.
It
we
has
have to.
To
have love of ourselves and you have to be able to have that peace within before you can be able to connect that with
other
people.
And there's something, that word contentment is powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm studying the teachings of Paul in the New Testament and all the different letters he wrote and the journeys of his travels as he's trying to teach people, in this case, about Jesus and his teachings. But I found recently a few verses where the word content or contentment is used. And as a Christian, I don't know that I've ever thought that's part of my belief or part of my persona. If I'm known as a Christian, if I want to be seen in that light or have people who say, oh, she's a follower of Jesus, she's a content person. Mm-hmm. She's a peaceable person. It's not how I look. It's not how I talk. I mean, I hope I talk nicely to people, but mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I hope to be known. Am I the person who's content?
Yeah.
Who can handle it? I love that, yeah. Michelle.
And I do want to clarify, I am spiritual.
Oh, we know you are.
I do have deep beliefs of God. And I was raised missionary Baptist and was a born-again Christian at the age of 12. I can tell you where I accepted Jesus as my Savior.
Oh, my gosh, I love you.
I've been through all of the things religiously, right? I've just gotten to a place where organized religion doesn't serve my soul and heart any longer. And I don't... I tried to fight it for a long time, and I just don't want to fight that anymore. So I'm just choosing to do it differently. But, you know, I pray, I meditate, I read.
Well, and like you said, you're finding that peace and contentment. Mm-hmm. And how many times have we said in the conversations about resilience that acceptance?
Yeah.
And not acceptance like, okay, woe is me. I guess this is the best I'll ever have in my life. But an acceptance of this is what my life is. Mm-hmm. This is a part of my story. That's contentment, is it not? Yeah. I mean, you're using different words, but similar emotions, similar process.
When I think of happiness, I kind of feel like we've all been sold this lie that the point of life is happiness.
Is to be happy.
I'm like, happiness is something I experience throughout my life.
Right.
But it's not something I can maintain level consistently.
Not all paths are lined with rose petals.
In my solitude. Hmm. I know a lot of people that are really lonely and they're not content and they don't want to live if they can't be with somebody. And it doesn't matter who that person is.
That's so true.
Whether they're real, imagined, or abusive.
Or toxic. Right. Yeah. How many times have we had that conversation?
Yeah. So it's like, at what
content.
Level is that being with somebody
better than
being alone, right? And I think instead of trying to find happiness, if people would start to look for ways to find peace
and contentment.
Themselves.
I think if you had a conversation with Mike Glauser, you'd find you're talking about the same thing. I think he's calling it happiness because the idea is to, how do you find happiness? How do you find purpose? How do you find fulfillment? Mm-hmm. And it's not just the fleeting moments of happiness, but a true content circle.
So we started this conversation on kindness, but we ended
and
up
holiday
kind of,
gatherings.
And holiday gathering, but we kind of did our ADD thing. Which
but I think it's
really
all related because we're
it
talking
all
about
related.
If you want to have universal peace and contentment in your holiday gatherings, what we might all need to do, and this is probably me talking to myself most, maybe chill out a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? So much
it
of the stress and so much of the discontent and so much of the disappointment is that expectation that either everyone has to get along perfectly and love each other in every moment, or the turkey has to be as beautiful and the tree has to be perfect. And guess what? My house is not going to look like Pinterest board.
Yeah.
And neither is my turkey dinner. And if I can chill, although Michelle's going to get me there. She's getting me there with the turkey dinner.
I'm going to say your house does look like Pinterest board.
Oh, come on over.
Even when it's not holiday theme decorated, maybe. I mean, it's a very nice home.
I have a beautiful home. I am not a decorator. Neither am I much of a cook. But my son is a very good cook. And I think he's probably just like, my poor mother can't cook, so I better step in. So maybe I'll have him help. I'm very good at mashed potatoes. I'm very good at rolls. I'm very good at buying groceries.
I know, but
there are things I'm very good at.
I'm going to help you make that. I'm not making turkey this year.
She's going to coach me through it.
My first year, I'm not making turkey.
And this is the first year I am making the principal key turkey. Is that hilarious?
Isn't it funny? We're kind of flipping roles here.
I am 44 years old and making my first Thanksgiving turkey.
It's so funny. I can't eat turkey. It puts me right to sleep.
I love turkey.
One bite and I am out. It is like the best kind of
sleeping
medicine.
The only thing I hate
medicine.
About Thanksgiving is that for whatever reason, we only eat that food once a year. And I always say I'm going to do better, but I don't.
You're going to.
Like, I just need like a random
turkey.
Okay. On a random Tuesday in March, we are having Thanksgiving dinner. Because to be honest, like sometimes my kids love Chuck-O-Rama because they can have French fries and blue Slurpees for dinner. And I'm like, fine, I don't want to worry about it. And I go straight to the turkey stuffing and mashed potatoes on a Tuesday in March because I can.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
Do you have
celebrate.
A cranberry sauce?
No,
is
I need
your
one.
Family?
I love it.
Oh, okay. My grandma has a great traditional old-fashioned
so listen, everyone.
Zest.
If you're listening, we would love for you to tell us what you're doing for the holidays. Go find us on our social media pages and maybe we could start asking like a question of the week.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, what are you thinking doing up to this week? This one would be, hey, guys, what's happening at the holidays for your house, regardless of which holiday and what you celebrate. I am going to host whoever has nowhere else to be because it's the off year. So most of the family is going somewhere else, but I will be the safe haven of hopefully not take out Chinese food if the turkey goes south. But I love, Michelle, I love what you've shared with us about being direct and kind, and then also being content.
It's not fair to have the expectation of
not to yourself or anyone in your
behavior when you know that there's some issues that are lurking that could really erupt. And if it's not at that level, then maybe you don't say anything.
Right.
But then also be prepared with saying, hey, let's not do that here. Let's not do that now.
Not today, right now. Yeah. And we can, and I think we can all learn from what you said, where the answer is to just have an even-keeled conversation. Mm-hmm. How many problems would be resolved in inter-family relationships if we just talked to each other rather than worried about it or about each other or dropped a hint or why don't they get this? You know. So that's going to be our goal for these holiday seasons, to be kind, be direct when necessary. Mm-hmm. But try to create a space in your gatherings, whether it's at your home or elsewhere, where people feel safe being themselves. And if that means certain conversations need to be tabled, that's okay. We're not eliminating them. We are acknowledging them. Mm-hmm. But we're maybe not addressing them over turkey dinner or ham or whatever
you
eat.
Right? Okay? Not the time. Time and place matters.
Oh, the holidays. I'm so excited. Although it's a stressful time of year, I'll admit I'm kind of getting itchy for the holiday music, which is not my norm. Have you stopped
already?
It's not, when we're recording this pre-Halloween, I'm sure we're airing this later, but tomorrow is Halloween. Michelle's already listening to Christmas music.
I went to Hobby Lobby and it was Christmas music and I started crying and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to start listening to it now. And I turned on my Christmas tracks in the car.
Oh, I love you. Well, people know if you've heard me before, final comment here. Brent's truck that he drove, you know, he deployed in January. So the last time he ever drove that truck was Christmas time. And still in that CD player for the longest time was the Gentry Christmas soundtrack. I can't hear a chord out of those three men's mouths without getting every emotion in the book. So you know what? Wherever you are right now, stop. Turn on some holiday music. Whatever holiday you like, whatever music. Take a pause from the podcast world for a few minutes. Turn off the news. Turn off whatever else you're doing. We all need a little more music of the holidays. Let's invite that magic into our lives with realistic expectations about the stress, because we're just going to chill out a little and be kind.
Yeah. And you know what? We got to start being kind to ourselves. You know, we always say remember to be kind.
Okay, to continue, maybe that's next time's conversation.
Be kind to ourselves. So remember, whatever you do, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.